broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
It's March 5th, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
From AlexsGuide.net, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
Our roving reporter and associate news editor, Jason Strasberg. And I'm your host, Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. And this is the news. Starting on March 1st, we've got two top stories leading to that. March 1st, the San Diego Comic-Con, the annual huge convention, which takes place, of course, in San Diego, California, tickets went on sale. That ties in with our second story. Tickets went off sale about 90 minutes after they opened. That's right. If you were hoping to get any tickets, even for a single day for Comic-Con, they're gone. People just looked at them and signed on and said, "What happened?" They're gone. But on a more serious tone, our other top story is over at Jeff Jacques, that's JephJacques.com. He has a storyline going on about Lieutenant Potter, where he talks about his entire storyline actually being a little derailed by sexual harassment. That's right, he actually had a completely different storyline planned out, but he didn't like the way that this storyline was going. So he just went over, rewrote it, and came out with a lot more serious connotation than he was expecting. Definitely an interesting take on what he was going to do versus what he was saying. So take a look at it and take at his post on it. And then over to our Buzz section with Alex. Alex?
This week in Buzz, we have two stories. First up, over on Bleeding Cool, creator Cy Spurrier sat down for an interview to talk about his webcomic Crossed, Wish You Were Here, which is launching this month on March 14th. The comic is about the zombie apocalypse, but I think what we're more interested in is that he's following in the footsteps of Warren Ellis's Freak Angels in terms of the distribution. Updates will be a full episode every week, and the printed collections will be made available for retailers and all a couple times a year. You can follow Crossed at CrossedComic.com and, of course, read his interview on BleedingCool.com. And this week in Archie Comics news, oh, our favorite, Archie Comics. This comes to us via Comics Beat and Bleeding Cool. The marriage of Kevin Keller to his partner Clay has caused the activist group 1 Million Moms to go up all in a tizzy. 1 Million Moms, which is an arm of the famously homophobic American Family Association, is demanding that Toys R Us remove Archie Comics from their check lanes due to the recent installment of the comic in which Kevin and Clay got married, complete with a depiction of the ceremony on the cover. Scandalous. I mean, they're right there at eye level of children, and obviously having to explain to your kids that sometimes men marry men is much harder than simply insulating them against the fact that queer people exist. Rock on, Kevin and Clay. It's also worth pointing out that 1 Million Moms actually has a membership of about 30,000 moms, but I guess it's not as catchy. That's it for Buzz this week, and now we're going over to Jason with business.
Thanks. And here is this week's business news. We start out with an article from Bleeding Cool, where we have a follow-up to the copyright court case between Todd McFarlane and Neil Gaiman. Citing the research of blogger Daniel Best, Bleeding Cool theorizes McFarlane will have to pay upwards of $382,000 to Gaiman. Now, this is based on court papers that show the erstwhile comicer and action figure producer was ordered by the court to pay this sum into an escrow account after a subsequent bankruptcy in 2008. The reason? To offset any losses if McFarlane lost the case. But this amount may be suspect. In a follow-up article posted by the Comics Beat, Gaiman is quoted as saying on his Tumblr that this is a particularly stupid piece of jumping to conclusions journalism. All they actually knew was the judge had ordered that amount of money released from escrow. When the final agreements and accountings were done, I could be getting none of it or 10 times it. It should also be mentioned that Gaiman is quoted as saying numerous times that any money he is awarded from this case will be given to comics-related charities. Next up, we have an article from GigaOM, where we're presented with some disturbing trends happening in the e-publishing business. It seems that large booksellers with their own proprietary e-readers like Amazon, Apple, and Barnes & Noble are only choosing to offer books that meet their own competitive interests. GigaOM goes further to cite a post by Seth Godin about his last experience trying to get his latest book on Apple. When asked why they rejected it, Apple stated that it had multiple links to the Amazon store. Now, Godin, no stranger to the e-publishing business, points out that this is a problem because it means we're heading to a world where there are just a handful of influential bookstores, and one by one, the principles of open access are disappearing. Now, you may be asking yourself, what does this problem in the prose publishing business have to do with comics? Well, these publishers are also putting comics onto their e-readers, and if this kind of draconian publishing standard becomes the norm, then it's something we're all going to have to face if we want to have our work published, and once the print business begins to die, it seems like that's going to be the only venue for it. Next up, we have another article from Bleeding Cool, where we're told that Pixton, a service set up to help users create online comics, has been awarded first place and a $30,000 prize in Canadian dollars for the BCIC New Ventures competition held in British Columbia. Now, Clive Goodson, the founder of the service, is actually quoted as saying that this is a huge vote of confidence for what they're doing. If you want to take a look at this, or if you want to see any of the other entries for the competition, you can go to newventuresbcc.com. Finally, we have two articles, one from The Atlantic and the other from blogger Mark Perry, that offer data and charts that detail newspaper advertising revenue over the past 60 years. These numbers are adjusted for inflation, and they show how sharply print advertising has declined with the advent of the internet. The Atlantic goes even further to point out the revenue of specific newspapers, like the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, and the Washington Post. So, if you want to take a really good look at how print publishing is bound for a new change coming up, take a look at these articles and let us know what you think. And that's it for business news.
Thank you for that news, Jason. And we're going to go ahead and take our first break, and we'll be right back after this.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
And we're back. I want to thank you all for joining us once again. And now back into our news over on our education section. Let's go back to Alex. Alex?
Thanks, Tom. Over on makingcomics.com, Jason Bain shares his checklist of things to review, which he uses as the editor of Carpe Comics. In a three-part series, he lays out everything he looks for in every comic, starting with how the page flows from panel to panel, to the editing of dialogue, and then finally making last touch-ups to the finished artwork. It's a really good breakdown for catching what he calls novice mistakes that, as an artist, you or I might not think about it at first. And it really, really, really speaks to the value that an editor can bring to your work instead of just sort of doing it all yourself and then putting it up online immediately. Over on transom.org, that's TRANSOM.org, Jesse Thorne lays out his 12-step program for succeeding on the web, using one of the internet's success stories to illustrate each of his points, which range from Felicia Day, Jonathan Colton, Boing Boing, Insane Clown Posse, Merlin Mann, and webcomics' very own Kate Eaton. Over on The Daily Cartoonist, Danielle Corsetto of Girls with Slingshots recently represented the webcomics business model in the Success in Comics seminar, which took place over the February 24th weekend in Las Vegas and was hosted by the creator of Tundra, Chad Carpenter. Via Comics Beat, over on YouTube, the 1987 documentary Masters of Comic Book Art was briefly available for watching, but was unfortunately pulled off due to, obviously, copyright violation. As I said over on Stately Beat Manor, old hairdos can certainly be embarrassing, but hopefully someone will be able to put the documentary up somewhere else for those who missed out on YouTube, because it did look pretty interesting. And finally, over on Comics Alliance, Yusuke Murata's comic, Hetapi Manga Research Lab R, awesome name, uses really cool techniques like folding paper and cutouts and light shown through the back of the paper to achieve a really innovative mixture of 2D drawings and 3D effects. And that is it for education.
And now over to our tech section with Eric. Eric.
Thank you, Tom. We have two stories in tech today. Starting off, Wacom announces its Intuos 5 graphic tablet with hands-on. The new graphic tablet is available in a number of sizes, small, medium, and large. The small is a 4x6 inch, medium a 6x8 inch, and a large 13x8 inch. It allows for both use of pens and also is touch sensitive to your hand and will allow you to use your hand to operate it. This article has a number of information on the technical use of the tablet as well as a video showing its use. Our second story comes to us from Apple and iTunes. iTunes has now included a comics section in their iTunes store. Up until this point, comics and graphic novels were listed with all other types of books, and it now has a separate section, not just a separate category. Now back to you.
Actually, back to you, Eric. Let's go ahead and look at our oddity section as well.
great
way to start off our oddity section with a little bit of oddity ourselves. So back to our oddities person, the odd Eric Kimball.
Well, all right. For those of you who are paying attention, we are in the oddity section. And we have a cute little blog coming to us from Natsusumi Hayashi, Tokyo's Levitating Girl. Natsusumi was taking pictures of herself, her cat, her friends, and then on September 16th, 2010, she posted a picture of herself entitled Today's Levitation, which showed herself as if she was levitating above the ground. This became an internet sensation, and for the last 2 years, she has been daily posting a picture of herself as if she was a character, as if she was basically a superhero levitating above the ground doing various daily tasks. That's all for oddities today, and then over to Jason.
And now for tidbits. We start out with an article from the Comics Beat, where we have a Lebanese webcomic called Cerub. In this comic, the readers actually vote on what happens next in the plot. Now, the article actually goes to point out that the demographic is a little skewed. In fact, from their research, it seems mostly to be made up of people who are interested in groping female players in online games. But an interesting sidebar to this article is that they uncovered that the comic is somehow related to a startup accelerator based in Lebanon called Sequence, spelled S-E-E-Q-N-C. So, all around a strange article, but an interesting one. Next, we have an article from the Daily Cartoonist, which says that the Cartoonist Studio, a portal set of cartoon artists set up to help them communicate with their fans, has announced they are launching a digital publishing company called Crazy Goat Publishing, which will focus on cartoons, apps, and graphic novels to be distributed through its website and appropriate app markets like Droid, iTunes, etc. The article also states that they've converted some of their members' print books into ebook format already, and this list includes Brian Crane's Pickles and Peter Gurin's Ask Shag. Now, the company has also released its first graphic novel, a zombie series called Soterologist Number 1, The Beginning of the End. Finally, we are sad to report that we have gotten news from pretty much all around the internet, but the article that we are going to focus on is one from the Washington Post that has announced that Jan Berenstain, co-creator of the Berenstain Bears and the last of that co-creator group, is passed away at the age of 88. And you can go to the Washington Post article and read more about Jan Berenstain and the Berenstain Bears and the history of the Berenstain Bears series. And that is it for tidbits.
Thank you for those great tidbits, Jason. And we'll be right back with our discussion panel right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. And we're at our discussion panel time with our usuals from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations.
From AlexisGuide.net, Alex Heberling.
What?
Your lovely and talented host, Thomas Revor. And our guest today from Crossover Kill, Ben Carver.
Hello.
And from the webcomics Shifters Redo and Brimstone over at ShiftersOnline.com and Brimstone, BrymStone.net, Marie Terry.
Hi there. And it's Redux, not Redo.
Redux. Quack, quack. Hey, R-E-D-U-X. I've studied French.
That's why
they can't talk like real people.
But
let's go ahead and go get onto our first topic of discussion. Just a short story here. And that, as Jason had mentioned, Jan Berenstein of the Berenstein Bears has passed away. But we've also had a few other passings that weren't directly related to the comic world, but or webcomic world, but were notable this past week. The first, and I'll let you talk about this one, Ben, because you were our major artist of this, with all respect to our other guests, from Star Wars.
Yes, Ralph McQuarrie died. He was instrumental with a lot of the look of the good trilogy, the original trilogy. This was back when you had a huge cast of people working on Star Wars that were extremely talented. You had everyone on that team were dreamers, and Rob McQuarrie, no exception made there. He was obviously a guy who helped really create the look and feel that has been used ever since. It's, you know, everything from the way the tech looks, from the way the landscapes look. It's, this man was a master. He did a lot of design work for not only Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica. You know, he worked closely with Steven Spielberg on Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T. This guy is a science fiction design master.
And he also did a number of the Indiana Jones films, just to show that he isn't in a science fiction rut.
I would hardly call it a rut.
Also passing away this past week have been the youngest of the monkeys, Davy Jones, who passed away at 68, I believe, or 65, from a heart attack in his home. And also from a heart attack, reportedly, is internet leader, Andrew Breitbart. Whether or not you agree with his politics, you do have to admit that Andrew Breitbart has drawn a lot of attention to the new media here on the internet. So our condolences to the families of all those who passed away, and we will remember you in our memories. And next up, we also want to have a quick discussion about the release of the new Wacom tablets. And I will go ahead and let you, Marie, start talking about that one, because you are our artist of tech.
Oh, yes. This is interesting, because actually I teach Photoshop classes at a post-secondary level. And this is one thing that I do bring up to them is that, for the purposes of saving your wrists and, you know, also being able to take advantage of pressure sensitivity in art programs is to look at getting a tablet. And I'm looking at the specs. I heard about the Intuos 5 a couple of days ago, and I was like, sort of wondering what kind of massive innovation that they were going to do. And it looks like this time around, the only major difference between the Intuos 4 and the Intuos 5 is touch sensitivity. And it's only available on the smaller of the tablet group, like the small, the medium, the large. It's not available on the extra large. And there doesn't seem to be any increase in the pressure sensitivity at all from the Intuos 4. So I'm not sure if, you know, you do have an Intuos 4 and you're looking at upgrading, if it's really, unless you're going to use that touch sensitivity, if it's really even worth it, or, you know, just save up and buy yourself a Cintiq, really.
Yeah. I can't speak as an artist because as an artist, they don't even allow me to have the crayons anymore. But I've always wondered, because I've heard artists talk about the disconnect between drawing on a tablet like that and against drawing on paper where you can actually move your pen and see the line appear where you're putting it.
Well, that's the interesting difference between working on something like the Intuos, which is the flat. You have to learn how to look away from your hand and draw on the screen and keep your hand and separate. It does take a while to learn, speaking as a traditional artist who went to a digital format. But on the Cintiq, you're actually drawing right on the screen. It's actually got a computer monitor that you're drawing right on. So it is a little more like, it's very plasticky feeling, but it is a little more like drawing more natively, where you're actually looking at the surface you're drawing on. I'd say that the Intuos tablets do have more of a, they're more pressure sensitivity. The more easily it is to control, the easier it is on your wrists, the less it kind of just slips under your, you know, you're used to having pencil and paper. There's a certain amount of tooth there, a certain amount of grit. You feel the pencil gripping and on tablets, you don't have that, especially the cheaper ones, when they have really hard tips and really plasticky surfaces. It's almost like trying to draw on ice. It's very, very slippery. But the Intuos ones, I've always had this kind of vellum-y either pad or texture in the active area of the tablet that really does help that. Unfortunately, it does wear the nibs out fast, and you have to constantly replace them.
Yeah. And I know on a related story, we didn't talk about this here, but Kitty Hawk and I did over on Ben's podcast over at Animation Aficionados, amongst all the brony love that we had for the new My Little Ponies cartoon, she was talking about new tablets, and not just like Wacom tablets, but like the Android and iPad style tablets, mm-hmm. that Wacom was going to be coming out with some sort of arrangement with one of the tablet makers, whether it be Apple or somebody else.
Samsung, actually. It's the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1 that's going to have full Wacom compatibility.
Will it have pressure sensitivity on it?
Yes.
Reportedly, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, she was lusting over that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, that's definitely a step forward. That's like having a mini Cintiq at your fingertips with all your programs and everything, and you can take it wherever and go into like conventions and things. I mean, that's invaluable to have that there as, you know, something that you can draw on and show off, you know, to a big monitor or something like that.
Actually, one of the interesting thing about the Android tablets, especially the ones where you can actually draw on, is Adobe already released a suite of programs, apps, $10 apps that actually, if you have CS5 and above, actually I think it starts with CS5.5, you can actually sync what you're drawing on the tablet to the screen using the cloud. It's actually quite interesting.
I hadn't heard about that. I don't have a tablet though. I'm too poor. So. But it is something that I can see that we're moving towards. I'm kind of excited about it, to be able to again draw on the surface and watch what I'm drawing, like where I'm drawing, as opposed to looking at a screen and drawing somewhere off to my left.
Yeah, as a traditional artist, I've always had that problem too. I draw on paper. I draw on Bristol board. I always get smooth versus vellum personally, because I also ink, and I don't like the way the ink vellum swallows up ink. So.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a disconnect. I have a Wacom bamboo sitting right here, glowing its blue eerie glow at me. I use it just to do storyboards to send to other artists that do work for me. So that way I always get the results I expect, because that's all I use the bamboo for, is just to do quick storyboards, because that I can trust doing. To do a whole comic page on a Wacom, I don't think I'm that confident.
I know my collaborator, Darren Brown, who works with me over in my webcomics, prefers to draw in traditional media. In fact, he spends days searching for a specific type of Chinese calligraphy pen to do his work. Then he'll scan it in and do all the coloring and editing over on his system.
Yeah, where somebody like me, who actually I've gotten much shakier as I've gotten older in terms of my pen on traditional inking, I have to actually use like a brace to get nice clean lines, or use aids when I'm trying to ink. On the computer, I can actually set in Manga Studio, I can set tolerances and use my tablet to kind of overcome that deficiency in my art when I do it traditionally, unless I'm destroying, you know, drafting pen nibs by crushing them, because I have to push so hard to keep my hands from shaking.
Okay, it's
I'm waiting for them to come out with a graphics tablet made for people like me. I mean, they've got the Cintiq, they've got the Intuos, and for people like me, they need to come out with the Wacom Mole. But and on that note, let's go ahead and go into our next topic of discussion, and that will be about the whole new section in the iTunes e-publishing area, specifically for comic-related material.
This is really exciting.
This is exciting. I mean, it's a major company actually, I mean, forget DC, forget Marvel. This is Apple saying, you know, comics are so big nowadays, whether they be from the major companies or from the independents or even small people who do webcomics or are you publishing like us, having our own section, making it easier to find our stuff.
Yay.
Yeah, well, definitely. But it's also, too, like you're seeing now increased usage on mobile devices of people. This is where people are finding their new materials. This is where people are surfing the web from, and having that available now to them in such a, you know, in a format that they're now used to and everything. This is going to get, you know, instead of people having to search Google, you know, or some comic list or something like that, they're going to be able to go to iTunes, search for something like a keyword and find our comics so much easier for their mobile devices.
And they have made it a lot easier. I mean, we were talking about this during our break about the software which Apple came out with, which allows you to very easily make e-publishing books. Granted, it's for iTunes Store only, and you have to own a Mac to use this software, but it really is a very nice piece of software, and it's very easy to use to make your e-publishing.
Yeah, it's exciting, except for the fact that Apple takes so much money.
I mean, yeah, they take a 1/3 right out the bat. So,
yeah, 1/3, and it very quickly gets up to about 60% of what you're making when you start thinking about all the things that's going into this. So it's exciting in that it's going to be out there, but at the same time, the Apple Store is not a really good way to make cash.
You're asking for Apple to play nice, and Apple has shown in the past, at least with apps, we don't know what they're going to do with comics, per se, but with apps, if based on their standards of guidelines, they can ban something just because it's slightly negative speech or something like that. And I know they're not doing that with books yet. But we don't know. We really don't know. And
but we can also look at the flip side. The Android store has been playing catch up to the Apple iTunes store. And we've been seeing a lot of mirroring of software from companies that produce for both platforms. We're going to be seeing, are we going to be seeing Android do the same thing, create a specific e-publishing section for comics?
I agree. We definitely will see that from there. We'll also see that from the Windows Media Center as well, which you're going to be renaming soon, something that's less cumbersome. But overall, the whole idea is, yes, competition is healthy, and Apple doing something like this is going to create competition in mind share in the marketplace, and that's a good thing. It's, you know, not necessarily if you want to stay with Apple, but it will open up later options. Let's just say that.
Yeah. And I know that you have a problem with the money, Eric, but yeah. I have to say, I mean, even if they take 65%, 66%, 2/3 of the money, you're still, as a leader, you're still making more than if you went the traditional route and sold through Diamond.
Marie, what were you about to say?
I was going to say that for us in the webcomic, you know, who are already giving our material out for free, and we're really just looking for better ways of reaching our audience, it actually doesn't really make as much of a difference because we're not necessarily giving it. We're not necessarily looking to make a profit off of it, even if we're offering, you know, like you say that we're taking previous chapters and turning them into ebooks and then giving them out as more of a here you can read the whole thing at once. Especially for us who are doing the long form comics, this is providing an opportunity for people to share with their friends, for people to find it easier. I mean, I'm noticing that less people are really searching on search engines and are looking more to control systems for, you know, like trying to discover new things. And whereas, you know, you've got the ability for iTunes to suggest, oh, hey, you like X, well, maybe you like Y. If we're already giving it away for free and we're already putting it out into Apple and we're trying to get them to buy like a physical copy or come to support us at conventions or buy other merchandise, then it's really not so much of a big deal if they're taking, you know, a cut or whatever, because we are getting more play than if we would otherwise.
That's true.
And let me also add in, if you are going to be giving it away free on iTunes, it's very easy to do through the publishing system they have there. If you want to sell it, you have to have a tax ID. I think you have to have some sort of incorporation going, or you have to have some sort of structure. So it's just not a fly-by-night operation.
You have to have a business number to give and all this other stuff. Yeah, it's stuff like that.
It's a way of Apple protecting themselves as well, but it also is it's a formality. Like I said, in the webcomics world, we've seen a lot of fly-by-nights that put out maybe three issues or three comics or three strips and then just disappear.
Well, stop being so hard on yourself, Tom.
I lasted six, I'll have you know.
Well, the biggest thing I've seen, you know, the biggest thing is one thing you have to remember when we talk about statistics like that, Tom, is 90% of most comics starting out don't survive the first 3 months. Webcomics.
But you don't want them all in the iTunes store.
No, but
that would be so much junk in there.
But the problem is if you can put stuff in there for free without incorporating stuff like that, it's just like the people who have the early Cathy Press stores. People are going to go way ahead of themselves, flood the comic section with all of their early comics, and then all of a sudden never update them, and it's going to be, of course, they're going to be knocked down to the bottom really quickly, but it's going to create a false number of comics that are out there.
I think we're safe because I think most people don't want to put their stuff in iTunes for free. I think most people want at least a small amount for it. I think most people are going to be shooting for that 99 cents zone of where they're going to charge.
Okay, well, you know, we shall see, because the whole incorporation thing might slow them down. But I bet you, you're still going to see some people doing that. And I bet you it's not going to be a huge number, but it's going to be a number. It's going to be a percentage that's more than
12%. There's crap in the application store, and there's crap in there's other books and stuff that are on there that are, you know, not exactly high quality. I know I've been going through iTunes and I've been like, you know, why is this even in here? So there's probably going to be a certain level of like kind of chafe, but
so it'll be like, it'll be like fart apps, but for comics.
Yeah,
probably.
Okay.
And forget this 99 cent stuff. I'm going to put a big picture of a diamond on the cover of our comics and sell it for $1,000.
That'll actually work. That will sadly actually work, Tom.
Well, believe me, it did when they had an app like that. So, hey, if I do it through e-publishing. But our discussion on iTunes all segues into the other story that's similar to this, and that's talking about it becoming a walled garden, quote unquote. Marie, I know you were very passionate about this one, so I'll let you take over on this one.
Well, just the idea that like Amazon pulled a whole bunch of titles, and that there are limited, or like Apple's being limited, Apple's publishing software for eBooks being limited to Macs, being limited to the iTunes Store, and that now that the way that the e-publishing model is got so much potential and so much, you know, to allow for things that weren't available before when you're looking at the traditional publishing market. Like when you had to submit manuscripts to a billion different publishers and get rejected 5 million times until you got an agent who knew somebody who had coffee with somebody and you actually got your foot in the door. It allows so many more people who couldn't afford to do that, who couldn't do that, to actually get their work out there and get you know, noticed. And there's a lot of people who have had success stories now because of e-publishing. But to have these companies basically coming along and dictating what you can, you know, basically what you can, through the software or through the distribution, what you can and cannot do, it's kind of watching it crash down itself and watching that pendulum turn back inside, back on itself.
Yeah, it's really a problem, and I'm really concerned, not so much for the independents, because all of these apps, all of these programs seem to be very independent friendly. If you're just a small producer, they'll say, yeah, sure, put it on, we don't care. But where we're getting problems is where Amazon and Apple are dealing with other large companies and trying to define prices and trying to define content. And
well, we've seen that that's a good thing on one hand, with sticking with iTunes. I mean, when Steve Jobs insisted that there be a set 99 cent price per song, or there be a set price per movie,
right?
It completely changed the way that the industries had to work. I mean, the music industry was completely against it. They wanted to charge 15 cents for a 1940 rendition of What Am I Doing Here versus the latest pop superstar that's going on, where they wanted $2.99 for a song. by setting the flat rate on controlling, there are going to be some good signs as well.
Yeah, it really is how it's going to shake out. It's one of these things that the problem comes when a company overreaches and it starts disenfranchising the consumer. The latest story about Amazon pulling thousands of ebooks from their Kindle market simply because they have a pricing dispute, that's not helping the consumer. The 99-cent thing that Steve Jobs did, that helped the consumer, but this is pulling it is not helping the consumer at all.
Right, but I mean, we've seen stuff like this in the comic print world with the near monopoly that Diamond has. I mean, getting something through Diamond is practically an impossibility. And if they don't like something that you have done, they've got no problem with pulling that out of their listing willy-nilly.
Yeah, but we don't want to duplicate that system. Is what I'm saying. We don't want Amazon and Apple to be the new Diamond. That is a problem because we have seen how bad that runs.
And that's sort of the big thing is that you're dealing with now. You've got these sort of two major, or you've got a few major, basically, people who have like kind of a hold on this, the distribution, just like Diamond does. And then, you know, if you are part of a larger, you know, like, especially from people who were under the old model or now the publisher, it's like, let the consumers decide, for crying out loud. Like, if you're overcharging, people won't buy it. Come on.
Yeah. And to go back to the Diamond example, I mean, this does not prevent someone from having a PDF or having an ebook form, which they can download off of an independent website. It's a central location where people can go through. It's not like going to a Barnes & Noble's, but like I said, it's more like Diamond, where they're actually doing the distribution, where they're having the cross-referencing, they're having the advertising at relatively low cost or no cost, because it's being taken out of the percentage you're already making.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the problem, and I want to go back to this Steve Jobs example of 99 cents. The 99 cents rule had to be put in place not because of anything intrinsic in the selling of music. It was simply because the music industry didn't understand how that market was going to work, and it had to be put in there so it wouldn't have been chaos. We're beyond that. People understand the web now. You don't have to baby them with the prices anymore. People can set their own prices and learn how and work around it. And these latest things are not about the consumer. They're about the bottom line. Amazon pulled the ebook simply as a negotiation tactic to increase their proceeds. The consumer doesn't see that price. It's going to be solely in Amazon's bottom line, making more money. And that becomes a problem when you have monopoly companies using their power to increase their profits, disenfranchising both the consumer and the producer.
I mean, there's definitely going to be factors both for and against all of this. It just is a matter of laying out and seeing how it goes. And to segue to our next one, we've seen somewhere how it goes with the old media, and that is with the sales of newspapers going down. And by newspapers, I just want to stress that it's traditional print newspapers. We've been seeing fluctuating numbers on e-published versions of newspapers and online versions of newspapers as opposed to print. I mean, is print dead?
Well, I'm not surprised. This graph is very amazing. Like, I'm not really though surprised. I work in marketing, and it has been declining for years, the amount of actual effectiveness that newspapers have in terms of getting people's attention. So I'm not really surprised at the value of that advertising, the amount of, you know, eyeballs looking at a newspaper and the target groups, especially with people turning to the immediacy of the internet and other sources other than newspapers. You know, they've kind of gotten a little more savvy. They figured out that, you know, that they're not, you know, necessarily getting told the truth, and they're looking for more legitimate, more real sources of information, and that this information is getting. I don't think paper necessarily is dead on its own, like print, and I think there's still value in printed books and printed maybe magazines and stuff. But I really do think that, you know, the newspaper to some degree may have outlived its usefulness. I mean, I get my newspaper and I recycle it almost immediately. I'll give it a flip through, check the coupons, and then throw it away.
Yeah, newspapers have been declining for a long time, even before the internet became popular. I mean, the first hit that it took was radio, because people didn't have to go and wait. They could just pick up a radio and listen on the go. And then television, having that visual medium with the moving pictures, kept people stimulated. It also had the near immediacy, or immediacy when it was a breaking story, and they could jump in there. The old song was that radio and television were the short version, the quick, brief thing about it, the sound bites, and newspaper were the more detailed information about it, where you could read the story and get all the facts behind the facts that you saw on radio and television.
A very wise thing I've heard about new media is that new media never replaces old media. It does siphon off a certain amount of the customers, but what happens is the old media adjusts and fills in the gaps that the new media can't handle. And newspapers are a good example. They gave more in-depth study of a story, so there was still value to that. Now the internet's coming along, and it's competing with newspapers. I don't think that we're ever going to see print paper go away. I think there is still a place for it. It's just going to be different than what it was before. We're not going to see it. It's not going to die. It's going to change.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the domination of some of the huge newspapers, like the New York Times, like the Washington Post, where they controlled everything. I mean, you find a story in your local, a national or international story in your local paper, and it's going to be from the New York Times or the Associated Press or the Washington Post. Having the internet with, I mean, forget about bloggers and forget about stuff, having legitimate reporters broadcasting or writing on the net gives that immediacy, gives that in-depthness. The thing that newspapers always had to me personally, and this is both as someone who worked in the old media and someone who is who works in new media and is a fan of the new media, newspapers always had that gravitas, that weight of history, that they've been there, they've survived a lot, and they've had this reputation build up. But as we've seen in recent years, that reputation has been heavily damaged by bias, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. And people are just looking for something that is either open about their bias or that is going to be more correct. And from that silence,
I think that's the last word, Tom.
Let's go ahead and go on to our next story. And let's go ahead and talk briefly about our story about the Masters of Comic Books documentary that was made. Granted, this was back in 1987. But it was a great look at some, here's that word again, at some of the masters, the greats of the print comic book world. I mean, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, and so many others, where they, I mean, these are the people who were in the infancy of the comic books to the golden and silver age to, in 1987, the modern age. But it was also, as I told our cast here through the break, I mean, 1987 wasn't that long after Marvel's 25th anniversary, when the whole What About Jack scenario was coming up, where Jack Kirby was in the battle about the artwork and about some of the ownership rights, which are still going on to this day. So if hopefully somebody will put it back up online. It was taken down by YouTube. It was taken down by the person who posted it. But hopefully we will see it online, or maybe a DVD/Blu-ray set about it, because seeing something like this, or even a modernized version of it, is a great way to look back at the way that this industry was built up. And that brings us to our last story for discussion. We couldn't let this one go by without at least a little bit of talk about it, and that's the Million Moms March versus Archie Comics and the gay marriage. Now, the story that we've linked to, and you can see that link and this article referred to over on our website. And Eric, what's that website?
That's, I don't know. It's, webcomic
beacon. Newscast.webcastbeacon.com.
No, it's newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. Well, Webcastbeacon is the umbrella site for the entire thing.
The parent network.
Yes. And for those of you who find that confusing, you can write Fess about that. And
tell him to hurry up and get that webcomics with a Z domain going. But let me go buy
that domain really quick.
It's the article itself. I can see where the writer of the article was coming from. But this article, we talked about bias in the last story. This thing was so far biased. I mean, it was toppling over, folks. I don't agree with Million Man March. And yeah, there were 30,000 people who belonged to this, but which is about the same number of people who were at the Million Man March, but that's another story.
I think you rounded up there, Tom.
Huh?
I think you rounded up there, Tom.
Yeah, I don't care. There was nowhere near a million people out there for either of them, so I don't care. But it really is. These are people who have an opinion, and right or wrong, left or right, up or down, whatever, they're allowed to have that opinion. They're allowed to have that repercussion of it.
I know you think it's biased for a political viewpoint. The news source this is coming from is not particularly biased for liberal or conservative. It's biased pro-comic. And so I think the real offense that the author of this story took was that that the Million Moms were trying to attack a comic. And it's a very pro-comic site, but I don't think it was biased in the respect you're thinking.
Let's be honest with each other here. It's a badly conceived notion that they're doing here, because we were talking about this very specific marriage here, and it's like trying to clear the board of the bingo board here.
Well, how is that badly conceived? That's bloody brilliant. I mean, here's the
thing. I'm not going to complain about comics being too diverse.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what they're doing. They're saying comics for years have been, you know, not diverse, and Archie Comics is trying to become relevant again. So what do? They do the most controversial thing possible and have Calvin Keller getting married to a black man.
No, other way around.
Kevin Keller's white and the person he's marrying is a black man who is also in the military.
No, that's the other way around. Kevin Keller, the white guy, is in the one in the uniform who's marrying a black man.
Oh, okay.
In a gay marriage. So, I mean,
And they are definitely trying to clear the boards, but they're doing this intentionally, and they are trying to get people upset about it. You know,
the CEO of Archie responded to the article on Bleeding Cool, saying that Riverdale is an inclusive place and the place that we hope America will be someday, and we're not going to back down from this, and it's going to be, you know, Kevin Keller will forever be a part of Riverdale, and he'll live a happy, long life.
To me, the problem that Archie Comics has is, one, they created for themselves, and that is for so long, they marketed themselves as books for kids. These were children's books. They were white bread, no racial pun intended. They were milquetoast. They were a little – they were simple. These were kiddie books. Yeah. And now they're getting to stuff where these are definitely not kiddie topics.
Yes,
I mean, there are people who have problems with something.
What's wrong with including gay people in something for kids? I don't get it. It's not like that. It's like people think that kids are stupid and they're not going to understand this stuff. When I really don't think that it's going to be that big a deal, unless, you know, we make it.
And herein lies the controversy with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On one hand, these people have a right to say they don't want their kids to be confronted with this. Now,
No, they don't have a right to say that. They have a right to look after their kids, but they don't have a right to say what I can say in a public area. They don't have that right.
I said they have the right to say this stuff. Now, about the whole what they've got against Archie Comics and Toys R Us, that I have a problem with. They don't have a right to block things. I mean, it's not like they're going in and turning these books over, which some of them may be, or destroying the books, which I would definitely have a problem with. They are saying that they do not think that this is right. They have that right.
Yes, they have the right to say.
Comics definitely has the right to do this. But like I said, it's a problem of their own making. Would there have been this controversy if, say, Vertigo Comics was doing something like this?
Well,
no, because that's the type of audience they've had all along. Archie had this very simple, very story type of storylines for so long that that's what they became known for.
If Vertigo Comics had a gay marriage and no one died or had aliens coming out of their chest, there would be an outcry as well. I think one of the problems, the problem with the comic is, you know, everyone thinks this is, Archie is milquetoast, and it really isn't. But it's always been, there's been social commentary, and we had T. Campbell on here the other, last week talking about this. And he talked about how Archie became this sort of milquetoast thing after a while. But they're trying to change. And I think this is one of the things that.
Right. This is part of the repercussion of the change. I mean, any change is going to have, Newton had proven this, that any type of change, any action is going to have a reaction. This is the reaction to the change that Archie's trying to bring. I've got no problem with Archie Comics doing this, but I've got no problem with these people complaining about it because it's not what they were used to. And it brings up stuff that they don't want to talk about with their kids yet.
I have no problem with them complaining about it. I have a problem with them asking major retailers to ban it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have the same problem when they tried to
ban. I also have a problem with them not wanting to talk to their kids about gay people, but that's just my bleeding heart.
If they want to talk about gay people or don't talk about gay people, that's up to the parents themselves. I think that there are some kids who are missing out on some reality by not discussing this stuff, but also yes. It's a matter of who gets to discuss it. The schools don't get to discuss it unless the parents don't want to. The comic books. If they don't want, kids don't want it. I mean, parents don't buy the books, but this is going to come up sooner or later. But that's neither here nor there. And this is neither here nor there because we've come up on our time. I want to go ahead and thank all of our panel who is here with us. Starting off with Marie Terry from Shifters Redux and Brimstone over at Shifters Online and Brimstone with a Y.net. Yes.
Thank you.
Make that difficult for the host here. from Crossover Kill and the Animation Aficionados webcast, Ben Carver.
Thank you.
And our regulars from the panel, from alexisguide.net, Alex Eberling.
Ta-da.
And from bladebunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Thank you much, Tom.
And that rounds it off with me. I'm your host. I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And we'll see you in the funny papers.